Welcome to Pro Wrestling Apologist Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Atkins. And much like the cups in the Street Profits entrance, I am flying solo today. My co-host, Steven, is presumed dead. He was touring the chocolate factory of an eccentric millionaire. And he got a little too close to the Lake of Chocolate, trying to get a little sippy poo, and fell in. And he has not been seen since. So we can only presume he has passed away. But if they recover his body and he's still alive, he'll be back next week. Or we might try to do a little Halloween seance to try to bring him back from beyond the grave. Either way, I'm pretty confident he'll be back next week. But until then, Steven, can you provide us with your ghostly voice to introduce the...
PWA, WTF, Hall of Fame?
All right. So, as you heard at the top of this episode, my co-host Steven has unfortunately passed away. So I called out for a favor from my little brother, Andrew, of the Crew Review podcast.
Well, hey there.
So, Andrew, hit us with that, with your Hall of Famer, your Hall of Fame, or
PWA WTF Hall of Fame. I know you're branding better than you do.
Yeah. Well, the ghostly voice of Steven already introduced the segment.
First, let me say I'm just really excited to get into this Hell in a Cell review. I totally watched the show and I'm totally excited to talk about it. But
it's in past tense for sure. It has already happened.
Right. And boy, the things that happened.
What about that match, dude?
I was honored to be able to
What about that Slapjack and Shelton Benjamin match? Note here to edit it if that match doesn't happen. All right, go ahead.
I'm here for the Hall of Shame, Fame, WTF, PWA nonsense. And you know, it's a spooky season. We went trick or treating today, and it's just that time of year where spook is in the air. So I figured I want to do a spooky gimmick, but why do one spooky gimmick when you can do three spooky gimmicks? The man we're here to talk about today is a man known as Kevin Fertig. Do you recognize that name, Craig?
I sure do.
He had three gimmicks, and we're going to power rank them. I think from worst to worst but most memorable. How's that sound?
Sure.
So the third is... he went by the name, and you may recognize this because there was another wrestler that went by the same name, Seven.
Seven has already been inducted into the Hall of Fame, but we'll induct another one.
Yes, this is your second Seven, so that would make, what, 14?
I'm hoping to make seven of them eventually.
And this gimmick was, it never saw the main stage, it never saw the big WWE debut, but it was, he used it in the indies, and it was a gimmick based off, yep, you guess it, the seven deadly sins.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it was due what
to
it was.
Due to the popularity of the film Seven, I'm sure.
It basically was that film as a wrestling gimmick. The second is actually the one he saw the most success with, and it may be his most known in terms of his run, but it's definitely not the one that had the longest lasting impact. His second gimmick we're going to talk about tonight was his third and final gimmick in WWE. It was actually in WWE's extremely popular, very well received ECW brand.
Yeah.
And he was, originally known as the ECW Vampire. Mm-hmm. Eventually, he would come to be known as Kevin Thorne. And, you know, he joined the illustrious New Breed stable. He had a manager named Ariel. Apparently, they were supposed to form a stable with Gangrel, but unfortunately for Gangrel, he really missed this firestorm before. So, what to say about Kevin Thorne? He was a vampire who, let's get into his accomplishments. He beat Nunzio.
Yeah, that is an accomplishment.
And so that's it. That's it for Kevin Thorne in the third and final.
That character of Kevin Thorne, by the way, was WWE's compromise to create a sci-fi fantasy character for the Sci-Fi Network.
Right. Yes, the original attempt was, I believe, the ECW zombie.
It was the zombie, a deserved Hall of Famer himself. But we have covered the zombie, yes.
I am sure we'll get there someday. But the final one, it is definitely the most well remembered, for better or for worse. Craig, do you remember his second gimmick?
He was Mordecai, right?
He was indeed Mordecai. Yes. Now, Mordecai, it's hard to really break down what he accomplished in the WWE, because he was in the WWE for approximately 48 seconds before disappearing again. But there began to be these vignettes for this religious extremist, which you should know by now that's going to go over extremely well.
Yeah, it always goes over well in wrestling gimmicks.
The thing about Mordecai is, if you go back and watch, he really only appeared like 3 or 4 times in person in WWE, and he's still remembered to this day. So I'm going to go ahead and say there may have actually been some
so much so that I actually got the two gimmicks mixed up. I was thinking Mordecai was the vampire gimmick.
Nope. Yeah, that was.
I forgot that Kevin Thorne was the vampire
that
gimmick.
That was his final run with Kevin Thorne. But no, Mordecai, he was a lot like Kevin Thorne, except Kevin Thorne was all black. Mordecai, all white. He wore all white. He had white hair. And he had the catchphrase, "Hear me, fear me." And so he made his debut against a huge name. So you knew they were going to push him to the moon right away. On May 16th, 2004, at WWE Judgment Day, he debuted against former WWE Tag Team Champion Scotty Too Hotty.
Mm-hmm.
He was
given the nickname, Scott's Too Hot.
He was given the nickname Pale Rider because he wore all white, including his white hair and white beard. He was actually pretty cool looking. He was an imposing figure.
Yeah, I remember.
It seemed like, I think everybody thought he was going straight for Undertaker. It seemed inevitable. And he ended up racking up some big wins, including one over Hardcore Holly. The first big name he fought was Rey Mysterio. He did have a televised match with Rey Mysterio, which he lost. And then Mordecai would never be seen again. Rumor has that there was a bar fight he was involved in, and there was some lawsuits that came with that bar fight, and Vince McMahon soured on him as a person pretty quickly. We did see him return to the company, but unfortunately his religious extremist, Mordecai, who was there to cleanse WWE of all of their sins, was only seen for all of about a month.
Yes. And now, and WWE is still just drenched in sin to this day.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, maybe if Mordecai stuck around, we would have never had to experience things like Hell in a Cell. Maybe WWE could have been a good, friendly place for all. But he did stick around, and he's in our Hall of Fame today. And now I can't wait to talk to you about Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, so let's get into it. We've definitely watched it. It is in the past tense for absolutely sure, and we're going to get into it now. So, Andrew, let's start with that first match.
Well, before that, I want to say that, man, Hell in a Cell really was an ongoing
professional. You said shell, stupid.
Yeah, I did. Shut up. Hell in a shell. It's a shell. It's a shell of a cell. And
a sort of.
My point is, it was an ongoing professional wrestling pay-per-view and WWE Network events produced by WWE for their Raw and SmackDown brand divisions, and it did take place on October 25th, 2020.
Which is today, which happened.
Right. So, other than that, what I really want to get into, that main event, that opening contest, remember the body slam that we saw?
I don't know.
That was a, you know, and then there was those.
Probably.
Those other, like, those Irish, oh.
There was usage of the cell. I know that the cell was used.
Right. Yeah, and then
it was red. I
think Michael Cole said was good. Hey, I'm getting another call
where he said, "Hey, remember when Heidenreich raped me?"
That was it was kind
or
of
no, he didn't mention
it. Was kind of out of left field that he brought that up.
It was like, "Whoa, that was like when Heidenreich raped me."
Right.
I think or something along those
lines.
Yeah,
I think I'm getting another call, Craig. So I'm gonna come right back and definitely review this paper.
Well, you want to plug your pluggables before you answer that?
That's a weird time to do it. I'm gonna come right back and review this pay-per-view that we definitely watched.
Just in case the call really ties you.
Well, I know there's a huge crossover between WWE fans and Columbus Crew fans, so I will plug my pluggables. You can find me on Twitter at @AndrewAtkinsSC. I have a podcast called The Crew Review where we recap and review Columbus Crew games, which for those of you who don't know, it's soccer is what that is. You can find us on Twitter at Crew Review Pod.
Football is what I call
it. Football. Football. Thank you for letting me plug. I'll be right back. I just got to take this phone call real quick.
Yeah, go get that call.
All right, well, thanks for having me for, you know, this few minutes, but yeah, I'll see you in a minute. Bye.
All right. He's not coming back.
That sure was a fun segment. Anyway, let's get to the meat of the show. The reason you're all here, all of you, except for Steven. We're here to talk about WWE's pay-per-view Hell in a Cell, brought to you by Skittles. Fucking Skittles. Taste the rainbow. So, Hell in a Cell opens up with the big championship match, the I Quit match inside of the Hell in a Cell cage structure between Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, where not only the title is on the line, but the status within the family is on the line. Apparently the family co-signed this, like, hey, whoever loses this wrestling match is out of the family. So if Jey loses this match, Jey is out of the family, Jimmy is out of the family, and their families are out of the family. So Roman's just ousting the Usos and their entire family out of the family. It's kind of messed up. So this was a hell of a match. I love this match. It's fantastic. There were super kicks and spears all over the place. And the only way to lose this match is to utter the words, I quit. And these guys did not want to quit. They beat the hell out. In fact, I believe Jey at one point said to Roman, I'm going to beat the dog shit out of you. There's a strap that was pulled into the match. Jey choked Roman out, like completely out. And Roman came to. Roman did the same to him, choked him out. Just brutal. And it ended with Roman lifting up the stairs and line the steel stairs and was going to bring them down on Jey Uso's head, and Jimmy Uso ran out. The way that Jimmy got in, there's a point where the referee was going to call off the match. and Roman said, basically just kicked the referee out of the match because he's got that power, told him to leave. So another referee came in, opened up the cage. Well, that allowed Jimmy to run in and covered up Jay's body and started pleading with Roman to not to further annihilate his brother and tag team partner. Said, we're cousins and we can fix things. And Roman Reigns started crying. His tears started strolling down his face as Jimmy pleaded, look at me, please. Whatever you're going through, you know we got you. This ain't it. And Roman says, I don't even know who I am anymore. I'm sorry. But then the moment Jimmy reached out his arm, Reigns pulled Jimmy, who has been injured, sidelined with a knee surgery, into a guillotine, which he seems to be using lately. Jay then pulled himself up and said, I quit, to save his brother, and thus removing their families from the family. And then as Reigns went up the ramp, his father and uncle, Sika and Afa, joined him at the top of the ramp and just you know, blessed the decision from Reigns and put the beads around his neck. And yeah, that's it. It was a fantastic match. I loved every bit of it. This story has been amazing. I am ready to kind of move on past it, but I'm glad they gave it the time that it's been given. I have no idea what's next for Roman Reigns right now. I would have originally said The Fiend, but The Fiend's on Raw now, so I don't know. I mean, ultimately, we know what is coming down the pipe, and that is the inevitable Big E removing the Universal title from Roman Reigns, but I don't know what's next for him right now. Maybe a Daniel Bryan feud would be interesting. I'd like to see that. So, moving on to a whatever match between Elias and Jeff Hardy. There's really nothing to say here. It ended with Elias reaching for his guitar, but Hardy snatched it away instead and smashed Elias. Guy DQ. There's really nothing here. It just is what it is. That's about it. That's all I have to say about that match. So we move on to a lot more interesting match. The Miz versus Otis for the Money in the Bank contract. It's a pretty fun match. But this match itself isn't the story. The story is Tucker turned on his tag partner Otis by taking the Money in the Bank briefcase and schwacking him with it, causing the Miz to get the win. And this was after Morrison had been ousted from the match, by the way. So Tucker turned heel, attacked his tag team partner, his brother, Otis, not literal brother, kayfabe brother. Not even kayfabe brother. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. Just friend. And yeah, Miz is Mr. Money in the Bank now. Tucky fuckied his brother. And really, ultimately, he kind of had it coming. I mean, this year, Otis has not acted like he was in a tag team. He's really left his buddy Tucky to the wayside. He's you know, he started getting all horned up for Mandy Rose, and just kind of went off and did his own thing. He forgot he was in a tag team. He chased her around for a while. The Money in the Bank briefcase like landed in his hand, and he won that match without really doing anything. And yeah, just kind of started going off on his own, being a solo star, leaving old Tucky behind. Tucky hasn't been used. I think just in the recent couple of weeks, we've seen that Tucky might have a bright future for him. He's pretty good talker. He's got a good presence to him. Pretty good in the ring. He's a big dude. I'm assuming maybe he'll act as the heavy for the Miz now, and be Miz's backup. Miz seems to always have some backup. I see a little bit of dissension between Miz and Morrison. I see them splitting up, but Tucky might be hanging on to Miz for a while. But yeah, I mean, this is what it is. It's Miz is definitely a better Mr. Money of the Bank. I was never a fan of them putting that on Otis to begin with. Also not the biggest fan of the match or the briefcase being put on the line in a match. I didn't like that with Mr. Kennedy way back when. Not a big fan of this now, but Miz is definitely a better person to give that briefcase to than Otis. So ultimately it's going to be better. And I think Tucky's kind of the star of that team, really. Otis will be fine. He's never meant to be a main eventer. It just is what it is. So I don't have any issues with that. Yeah, this is where it needs to be. Miz is definitely a lot. I can definitely see him being champ, and he deserves to be champ again. It's been a long time since he's been champ, so it's kind of exciting, actually. So, we move along to an excellent match between Sasha and Bayley in the Hell in a Cell. What I think was the match of the night. Phenomenal match between these two. They use the cage in a creative way. Lots of usage of kendo sticks, chairs, a ladder. It was basically a TLC match inside of the Hell in a Cell. It was just everything was excellent. There's one point where Sasha channeled Shelton Benjamin's ladder run by running up the table and or the ladder and smashing Bayley into the cage with a double knee for her Meteora. They traded finishing moves, lots of near falls, and there's a fire extinguisher was used at one point. And Bayley brought out the chair that she had used to injure Sasha, and that to no avail. She didn't get to use it on her. Sasha frog splashed the chair with the frog splasher with the chair wedged in the middle ropes there to hurt both of them. Yeah, excellent match. Ultimately, Bayley attempted a Bayley to belly with the chair on Sasha's back. But she slipped out and trapped Bayley's head in the chair. As she secured the bank statement, she stomped the chair down on Bayley's head. And then as she locked on the bank statement, Bayley tapped out. And Sasha Banks is now the SmackDown Women's Champion. Phenomenal. Don't know what else to say. Really enjoyed that match. I don't know what's next for them. I imagine that they have a rematch at Survivor Series next month. Or I guess if they do the champion versus champion, the rematch could be down the line. I could see this off and on going on to WrestleMania. I could see a big match between the two at WrestleMania. I loved it, though. great match. And this is fun doing a podcast on my own. Didn't know how hard this would be. I feel like I'm losing my mind rambling to myself. The show starts to slow down a little bit with the next match. It's Bobby Lashley versus Slapjack of Retribution. I don't know what the hell they're doing here with Retribution. This really makes no sense to me. Why do this match? We knew Slapjack wasn't going to win this match, especially the moment that they revealed that the championship was on the line. So why have Slapjack lose to Bobby Lashley? I don't get it. So Slapjack is now two losses this week. It really makes no sense. That's it. Yeah, Lashley put the hurt lock on Slapjack and beat him. Retribution came to the ring and got chased off by Hurt Business. Retribution could be so great, and they are great talent. Why is WWE booking them this way? Why don't they book them stronger? I don't get it. Moving on. Our main event for the WWE Championship, it's Randy Orton versus Drew McIntyre. This was a really fun Hell in a Cell match. There was a lot of usage of the structure in this match, more than the previous matches, to the point where they climbed up the cage, actually, the first time tonight, and to McIntyre's detriment, as Orton had a red pipe hidden at the top of the cage, and Orton used that pipe to cause McIntyre to fall from kind of midway up the side of the cage and crash through the commentary table. Drew would get back into the ring after that to try to prepare for a Claymore kick, but when Orton rolled out of the ring, then McIntyre just kind of hobbled up the little bit of energy left that he had, trying to slide Orton's dead weight back into the ring and tried to line up one more Claymore, but Orton ducked the flying Claymore and hit a single RKO and got the three count for the win. Clean. Orton won clean, and now he's a 15-time champion. That's the story coming out of that match. It was a really fun match. I didn't enjoy it as much as the other two Hell in a Cell matches, and I think I would have definitely preferred Sasha and Bayley to close the match. That was the real main event for me, but it was still a fun match. Overall, it was an excellent pay-per-view. Sorry for kind of phoning in this episode. I'm tired. I'm doing this solo. It's a little weird for me trying to do this on my own. But my low energy aside, it was an extremely enjoyable pay-per-view. I might even say this has been my favorite pay-per-view of the year so far. I mean, lots of title changes, obviously, and a not title change, but a Money in the Bank briefcase change that really kind of changes things up. I don't know when or who he's going to cash that in on, but Miz will definitely become champion, and I'm here for it. I'm excited to see it, and I think this is setting a lot of things in motion. I think with Randy Orton having the title, I think that brings Edge back into the fold. I think the inevitable pickup of that feud will now have the title involved and kind of add a little extra excitement to that feud. And Drew will ultimately get it back when we have fans again. I think that'll be a good chance for Drew to get the title back when we have a crowd. And man, I'm tired, so I'm calling this one. that's the episode. Steven will be back next week. Even if we have to piece him back together like a Frankenstein monster for Halloween, Steven will be back. But until then, you can follow me at PW Apologists on the Twitter and at Craiger Atkins on the Twitter. And you can follow Steven at Dragon Blazer Pro on the Twitter. And that's been Hell in a Cell. And we love professional wrestling, and sometimes that's okay.